This is Roger Penske, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, sponsored by Penske Truck Rental.
IndyCar fans, it's time to start your engines. Welcome to Pit Pass Indy, a production of Evergreen Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Martin, a journalist who regularly covers the NTT IndyCar Series. Our goal at Pit Pass Indy is to give racing fans an insider's view of the exciting world of the NTT IndyCar Series in a fast-paced podcast featuring interviews with the biggest names in the sport. I bring nearly 40 years of experience covering IndyCar and NASCAR, working for such media brands as NBCSports.com, SI.com, ESPN Sports Ticker, Sports Illustrated, Auto Week, and Speed Sport. So let's drop the green flag on this episode of Pit Pass Indy. Welcome to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental and Hy-Vee, as we continue our fourth season of giving IndyCar fans a behind-the-scenes look at the NTT IndyCar Series and the drivers and teams that compete in the Indianapolis 500. We want to welcome back our friends from Hy-Vee, who will be sharing the show with Penske Truck Rental this month and again in June in the big build-up to the Hy-Vee IndyCar race weekend at Iowa Speedway, July 12th through the 14th. This year's schedule includes a night race at Iowa Speedway on Saturday, July 13th, with another full race scheduled for Sunday, July 14th. Four of the biggest names in entertainment will perform before and after each race, including Luke Combs, Eric Church, Kelsey Ballerini, and Post Malone. For Malone, it will be the first time the famed entertainer has performed in Central Iowa. The sound of racing machines at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway roared to life last week as 35 car driver combinations hit the 2.5-mile oval for what was supposed to be a two-day Indianapolis 500 open test. Unfortunately, the weather did not cooperate as the two-day test featured just a little over 3 hours of track time instead of the scheduled 14 hours because of heavy rain. The 3.2 hours of dry track time came on Wednesday, April 10th. The following day, heavy rain forced IndyCar Series officials to cancel the final scheduled day of the test at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time and send the teams back to their race shops as they prepare for this weekend's Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. Of the time they were on the track on April 10th, that also included refresher tests for drivers that had not competed regularly for the full season, as well as rookie driver Nolan Siegel of Dale Coyne Racing, who breezed through his rookie orientation program. The rest of the track time was for veteran drivers or the drivers that have already passed ROP last October that are entered in the 108th Indianapolis 500. One of those drivers is our guest on today's Pit Pass Indy. It's Kyle Larson, the 2021 NASCAR Cup Series champion who will compete in his first IndyCar race in this year's 108th Indianapolis 500. Larson makes his Indy 500 debut for Arrow McLaren Racing in a joint entry that also includes his NASCAR Cup Series team, Hendrick Motorsports. Larson ran 47 laps around the 2.5-mile oval with a fast speed of 226.384 miles per hour in the number 17 Chevrolet. That was the second fastest speed of the test, although Larson said his lap was greatly aided by a tow from another car ahead of him that boosted his speed through the draft. Reigning Indianapolis 500 winner Joseph Newgarden of Team Penske was the fastest driver in the Indy 500 open test for the fourth straight year. Newgarden's top speed was 228.811 miles an hour in the number 2 PPG Chevrolet. Six-time NTT IndyCar Series champion and 2008 Indianapolis 500 winner Scott Dixon of Chip Ganassi Racing was third in the number 9 PNC Bank Honda at 226.346 miles an hour, followed by teammate and two-time IndyCar Series champion Alex Palou's 226.201 miles per hour in the number 10 DHL Honda. Colton Herta of Andretti Global rounded out the top five with a fast lap of 225.907 miles per hour in the number 26 Gainbridge Honda. Despite being severely limited because of the weather, 34 car driver combinations turned 1,327 laps. Larson, who went on to win the pole for Sunday's NASCAR Cup Series race at Texas Motor Speedway, believed it was a very productive test despite the limited amount of track time. I had a chance to sit down with Larson on Thursday, April 11th, for an exclusive in-depth interview at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway covering a wide range of topics. Here is my exclusive interview with Larson for Pit Pass Indy. Joining us now on Pit Pass Indy, it's a real honor to have the 2021 NASCAR Cup Series champion, Kyle Larson, join us. Kyle, you're an Indianapolis 500 rookie. We're talking from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. This is going to be an opportunity for you to get hours and hours of laps in. Didn't quite go that way because of the rain, but you told us after the rain aborted day one of testing that you got a lot of work done. If you could describe a lot of the stuff that you learned and how that was a good amount of time for you on the track.
It was good to get out there yesterday. I really didn't expect to get any track time this week, just with the way the forecast looked. So, no, it was good to get out there and getting just a little bit of traffic, just to kind of, for me, more so like visually see what an Indy car looked like from behind and kind of feel the runs that you get and feel the dirty air. I still don't know like what's real or not out there, but I think, you know, once we get to the month of May, I'll get a better idea of all that, but it was still good to get some sort of experience yesterday. First time on track with other cars. And there was kind of a lot to process, but I thought it went well.
Because you jump from one type of car to another in your racing, whether it be the NASCAR Cup Series car to the High Limits car to a World of Outlaws car, do you think that ability to adapt has helped you in this project of coming to an Indy car?
I'm sure it doesn't hurt, you know, that, you know, ability, I guess, or the experience that I've had, you know, jumping in different types of cars and learning new vehicles. Probably just gives me more confidence knowing that I've been able to learn other types of cars quickly. And I think had I just been strictly a pavement stock car racer trying to come run the Indy 500, I would probably be more stressed about things, but I've been pretty laid back with it all and excited for the experience and the opportunity and look forward to kind of trying to learn another vehicle, on an oval.
Have you gotten much advice from other NASCAR drivers who've tried the Indy 500, such as Jimmy Johnson and Kurt Busch?
I've talked to Kurt a little bit. I talked to Jimmy just briefly, I think, you know, a month and a half or so ago. But Kurt, you know, he was my teammate at Ganassi for a year or two, and he did a really good job here. So I've talked to him a little bit, but also at the same point, like, I kind of just want to try and figure things out on my own. The cars are way different than when Kurt ran. The style of racing is different than then. All of that. So, you know, I think a lot of times when you look at too much data or you think too much, then you're just thinking while you're out there. You're not really driving. So I think it's good to know some things or learn some things from people, but at the same point, you got to try and figure it out on your own.
When the late John Andretti was trying the double and he had come from an IndyCar background and went over to NASCAR, so he was doing it the opposite direction, he said in a lot of ways, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway between the two cars is like a completely different track. I believe you said last October at ROP that there was a lot of similarities that you noticed between the way you drive a stock car here and the way you drive an Indy car here. If you could explain what those similarities were.
Well, I think back when he was doing it, the stock cars and Indy cars, I'm imagining, were way different than what they are now. And I think, at least on the NASCAR side of things, I think it's, you know, the new next-gen cars have really transitioned closer to an Indy car style, you know. The tires are, the sidewalls are much shorter, you know, independent suspension, all of that stuff, I think, for me anyways, makes it feel a little bit more similar. So I feel like everything that I've felt, like at Phoenix, for instance, when I tested there, like, I thought the balance felt very similar to a cup car around that place. You know, the way that, you know, the steering wheel felt to my hands, the way I felt the tires kind of load, stuff like that. You know, the moments where you get, you know, maybe loose into the corner or off the, you know, exit, all that was like not crazy different. You're just going 7 seconds quicker there. But even that point, like, the IndyCar's got grip, so like it doesn't feel like you're going 7 seconds quicker. And then same thing with here yesterday. You know, it's what I felt yesterday with the tires and all that is what I would expect my cup car to feel like at 9 a.m., you know, when there's lots of grip and you're carrying a lot of speed. You know, we wouldn't run wide open in the stock car, but at least the way the tires and stuff load into the track, I think would have felt very similar. So I imagine it'll probably be similar too when it gets hot and slicker and you're struggling for grip a little bit more. So I think our sports have kind of transitioned to be more alike than they used to be.
In racing, everything's relative because you're racing against the competition. And if they're going 190, you're trying to go a little faster than they are. At Indianapolis, you're going 226 yesterday, so you're trying to go a little faster than the other guys. But did it ever dawn on you that 226-mile-an-hour lap's probably the fastest lap you've ever driven?
Yeah, it is the fastest I've ever gone. But, like, I don't know. It was weird because, you know, when I was in that little bit of a draft, I don't know, it didn't feel like I was going that much faster than a lap by myself. You know, I just had to shift gears. I don't know. I think because yesterday when I was, like, by myself and say there was other cars in front of me, like, straight away ahead, when you see them turn in the corner, they're going so fast. You're like, damn, it looks like way fast. But then, like, as you get, like, close to people, that sensation to me kind of, yesterday anyways, like, slowed down. So I don't know. It's just different sensations, I guess. It's kind of, I'm still trying to figure it all out.
Alex Palou yesterday said you can hear the speed. He can tell when he's going faster by the way it sounds. Did you notice that?
If he's referencing like a lap by himself or a lap, you know, by himself versus in traffic. I think when you get in traffic, yeah, things get a little bit quieter because you're in the draft and the air is, you know, not hitting your car as much. It's going over your car. So maybe that's what he means, but that's, I mean, similar in a stock car as well, you know, like Daytona or Talladega, when you get in the draft, things kind of quiet down some. I don't know. I didn't get many laps, so trying to figure it out.
When you came here for ROP back in October, you had Rick Hendrick, your team owner in NASCAR. You also had racing legend and vice chairman of Hendrick Motorsports, Jeff Gordon, and they were in awe of coming here, seeing you drive in an Indy car. For the open test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it was pretty much you with the Arrow McLaren team. And how important was that for you to be able to really focus and take the next step in getting ready to drive an IndyCar by dealing with the IndyCar guys?
I don't know. I mean, I felt like I was, when I did like the rookie test or the ROP and then Phoenix, like I didn't know who was who or who was on my team. And then like I get here and I realize like, oh, I had guys from Pato's team or Rossi's team. Like, I didn't know, you know, I thought those might've been my guys for when I came back and, you know, for all this. So it was good to kind of get to see who is my group of people, and get to, you know, talk to them a little bit and get, you know, familiar with each other some. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't distract me when there's a lot of, you know, people around me or whatever like there is right now. So, I feel like I can stay pretty focused on the racing and driving part.
But it seemed like in October, it was a little bit of a celebration with Rick Hendrick and with Jeff Gordon being here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for an Indy 500. Obviously, the two-day test is really get down to the nuts and bolts of getting to work. You spent a lot of time talking to Tony Kanaan, the 2013 Indianapolis 500 winner. He's the sporting director at Arrow McLaren Racing. How valuable was his input, and what's the dynamic like between the two of you?
To me, the dynamic's great. You know, I've gotten the chance to work with Tony, you know, before in the past when we were both at Ganassi, running, you know, the prototype car at the 24 Hours of Daytona. So I've had that relationship with him in the past, so it's been really easy to talk to him. And even if I didn't have a relationship with him, he would have been easy because he's just a really good guy and easy to talk to. But I think it's made it a little bit easier. He's got a ton of experience. So he's really who I've been leaning on the most when it comes to like driving stuff. So he's been great to work with, and you know, having somebody like that in my corner is only going to help.
And what is the relationship like between you and Pato O'Ward and Alexander Rossi? And to some degree, David Malukas, even though he hasn't been able to drive yet because of his broken wrist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hadn't got to spend much time or any time really with them up until yesterday. You know, we were sitting in the transporter waiting for the rain to kind of stop. It was just us four drivers in there. I don't think it was Malukas, but I think it was Callum in there. And we were just, I don't know, just chit-chatting and talking. And I don't know, it was fun to kind of get to see each other's personalities a little bit. Obviously, Pato's got a big personality. So he's going to be fun to be around, I think. But and they're all extremely talented race car drivers too. So it'd be, you know, good for me to kind of pick their brains when it comes to questions I may have. And, you know, also they're super experienced. So like they will be the bar, and I'll know kind of how close, if I'm close to them, how good I'm doing.
Speaking of Pato's big personality, do you sense and see how his charisma is really a positive aspect for the entire IndyCar series?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think for sure. Yeah, he's a young, and I barely know him, but seems young, energetic, not afraid to speak his mind. So I think that's good. And he's super fast. So I think all of those things tie into, you know, helping grow the series and grow the sport. So yeah, he's definitely good for, you know, IndyCar as well as motorsports in general.
So going way back, your father, Mike, huge Indianapolis 500 fan. What's your first recollections of the Indianapolis 500?
Just watching, you know, race day as a young kid with him, and you know, he always had like a brick or Indianapolis 500 t-shirt and all that. I feel like always that was probably his favorite t-shirt he wore. And then yeah, I think for me as a kid, I always understood, like I knew, I kind of figured my career trajectory was not going to go the IndyCar route, but I've always known that my dad has liked IndyCar more than NASCAR. So I think because of that, that's also made me want to compete in this event, you know, someday to make him proud and get to see his kid compete in, you know, the biggest race in the world and his most favorite race in the world. So, yeah, no, it's going to be special to have my family here and all of that. So I was texting with my dad a little bit last night too, and you can just tell he's excited about the whole thing.
So you're from California, and we're in the Rick Mears suite, and behind me are some photos of Rick Mears. And to a kid that's growing up in California that's a racer, what did Rick Mears mean to you?
Well, see, like he was before my time, really, so I didn't follow it much back then. But you're getting to come here last year. I got to have a conversation with Rick. Because Jeff Andrews, who's President Hendrick, that's like his hero is Rick Mears. So getting to like talk to him, and I've known obviously of his success here, but like getting to talk to him and you know, seeing how nice he is and humble and like willing he is to talk to me and give me pointers, you know, when I'm going to be competing for a different team, I thought was really, really cool. So yeah, and then him being from California too is just is great. You know, I think there's a lot of great talent from California, so I'm happy to represent that state, and hopefully I can do the state proud as well as Rick. I'm sure will be cheering for me a little bit because I'm from California as well.
And in our final question with Kyle Larson, who will be a rookie in the 108th Indianapolis 500, it's been a dream of yours for some time, but it took a while to convince Hendrick Motorsports to allow you to do this. How many years would you say you would try to talk them into going, hey, I want to run the Indy 500. Then you say, well, give us a few more years. How long did it take to really get you to this point with them?
Well, not long, because I've only been with Hendrick for 4 years. So, and yeah, I mean, it didn't take much at all, really. I had a great season in 2021 and won a bunch of races in the championship. So I felt like I had some leverage maybe to ask for to be able to do this. I wasn't expecting him to be a part of it, but I was just hoping they would, you know, bless me to go, you know, give me permission to go race. And then, you know, when it kind of Rick wanted to be a massive part of it, then I thought that was really special. So I think I remember mentioning it to him, I don't know, sometime at the end of, you know, in the off season of 2021, and, you know, he probably was catching up for Christmas time. And I could tell when I first brought it up, he was not really that into it. But like, I really wanted to do it. So I kept like talking to Jeff about it. And Jeff, I know, I think he knew how much I wanted to do it. I think he probably wanted me to do it as well. So he was like, well, let me just talk to Rick some. And if we can convince him to make it like his idea, I think he'll be a part of it. So it wasn't, you know, probably midway through 2022, when, yeah, he got on board, and then the conversation started happening with different teams, and ended up, you know, towards the tail end of 22, getting this deal put together with Arrow McLaren, and then we announced it all, I think, in January of 23. So, yeah, it wasn't much. You know, I would say, and even when I was at Ganassi, that's when it was more like, you know, the door was open. I just didn't feel like I was ready to do this. I think had I ever gone to Chip and said, hey, Chip, I really want to do the Indy 500, he would have made it happen. I was way younger and I would not feel like I was ready for this. So yeah, I feel like I'm ready to finally compete in this event.
From the short tracks of the High Limit Series and the World of Outlaws to the big tracks in NASCAR, to the biggest track of all, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indianapolis 500. Kyle, you're a true racing legend and a racing hero to many. Good luck in this year's Indianapolis 500, and thank you for joining us today on Pit Pass Indy.
Yep, thank you.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break. In the world of racing, Penske means performance and winning. For good reason. Since 1966, Team Penske has won 44 national championships, 17 in IndyCar alone. And last year, Team Penske claimed its Indianapolis 500 record-extending 19th Indy 500 win with Joseph Newgarden, the latest driver to win the famed race. Team Penske also won its second straight NASCAR Cup Series championship. In 2022, Penske was the first team in history to win both the IndyCar and the NASCAR Cup Series championships in the same season. Team Penske enters the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season with 236 IndyCar wins, including 34 500-mile race victories. Those are results that are tough to top. But Penske's legendary reputation for quality and attention to detail makes a statement off the track, too. When you need a truck, whether for your business or for a household move, Penske Truck Rental has some of the cleanest, newest, and best-maintained vehicles on the road. And we make it easy with personalized support from our associates, flexible reservations, and access to the top technology. With quick pickup and drop-off at more than 2,500 locations across North America, our scale and know-how will keep you covered, all helping to ensure you get the right, reliable, fuel-efficient vehicle when and where you need it. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. Get a quote today at PenskeTruckRental.com. Or, for household rentals, download the Penske Truck Rental mobile app today.
Hey, everybody. This is Joseph Newgarden, winner of the 107th Indianapolis 500, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Our next guest is one of the most interesting team owners in the IndyCar series. It's Dale Coyne, who has been a loyal supporter of IndyCar since he began his race team in 1984 in what was then the Kart Series. For the first 25 years of Coyne's team, his cars were usually in the back of the pack, but the man from Manuka, Illinois never gave up and learned how to do a lot with a little. Dale Coyne Racing is one of the smaller teams in IndyCar and has a limited budget, but it is very competitive on the racetrack. In 2009, Dale Coyne Racing scored its first IndyCar Series victory when the late Justin Wilson drove Coyne's Honda to victory at Watkins Glen International. 3 years later, Wilson drove Coyne's car to the win at Texas Motor Speedway. Mike Conway scored the team's third win in the first race of a doubleheader at Detroit in 2013. Wilson finished third to give DCR its first ever double podium. Rookie Carlos Huertas won another IndyCar race for Coyne in Houston in 2014. Four-time Champ Car Series champion Sebastian Bourdais won back-to-back season-opening victories for DCR at the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg in 2017 and 2018. In 2017, Coyne had his highest finish in the Indianapolis 500 when then-rookie Ed Jones finished third. In the last 10 seasons, Dale Coyne Racing has finished in the top 10 96 times and the top 5 35 times. This season, Coyne has three drivers rotating between two cars, including veteran driver Jack Harvey, Indy Next driver Nolan Siegel, and one of the most accomplished sports car drivers in North America, Colin Braun. Catherine Legg will drive a third Dale Coyne Racing entry in this year's 108th Indianapolis 500. Although team owners Roger Penske, Chip Ganassi, Michael Andretti, Bobby Rahal, and McLaren's Zach Brown field teams that are able to contend for race victories and championships, Coyne has proven that a team can be a winner without a huge budget. I had a chance to sit down with Coyne at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway to talk about a variety of subjects in this exclusive interview for Pit Pass Indy. Dale, we're at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the annual Indy 500 open test. Unfortunately, because of rain, they were only on track for about 3 hours of what could have been 14 or 15 total hours of running test time. You're one of the few teams that's not based in the Indianapolis area, so that's got to be quite an expense you have to absorb to really not necessarily get in as much time as you would have liked.
No, we would have liked more time for sure, especially with a rookie driver with Nolan and Catherine getting back up, not being a full-time in the series. So that's the bad news. The good news, April showers bring May flowers, so May will be very nice.
We can certainly hope so. For a lot of the teams that are at the test, as I said earlier, they're based in the Indianapolis area. The few exceptions, though, are yourself up in Plainfield, Illinois, which is a southwest suburb of Chicago. Also, Meyershank Racing is over in the Columbus area, and you have Team Penske, which is down in Mooresville, North Carolina. So for a lot of the teams locally, crew guys are sleeping in their own bed. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're home with their families every night. Your guys have to be on the road. So is there a way you can maybe explain the expense of what something like this does in terms of the budget?
Well, it's an expense, but it's not – the expense was already planned. It's the lack of getting the knowledge you want to get on the track and how to the changes you want to make. You have a list of engineering things you want to go through, and we're not able to do that. So, luckily we got time and got a lot of things accomplished yesterday in a short period. The cars ran fine, flawlessly, so that was good. No hiccups. Not that the budget's the budget. It's the experience that we needed and for our engineers and our drivers is where we lost out.
But the good news is the month of May at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you get a lot of track time, basically 6 to 7 hours a day of practice. So what you weren't able to accomplish today, I'm sure that when you return for the opening day of practice for the 108th Indianapolis 500, you'll still be working off that checklist to a degree.
Yeah, for sure. You do want to start with where you think you're going to be in May, because changing these cars around for a driver, especially a rookie driver, is not as easy to do as you think, because you send them out there in a car that handles like a Cadillac, and then you send them in a car that handles like an NSX. You just can't jump a guy around like that. You've got to give them a car that has a philosophy to it that stays the same all week, or you lose the driver, and then you can spend 2 days getting the driver back. So you've got to be pretty ready when you roll off the trailer, and then you don't know what the weather's going to do. Yeah, you really only have 3 days. You only got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday's Fast Friday, so you really only got 3 days of running. And if you lose the driver because you're changing too many things, you got to spend time getting them back, and all go to hell by the time you get to Friday.
all the years that you've been involved in IndyCar racing, going all the way back to the 1970s, 1980s, can you estimate how many miles you've traveled down Interstate 65 from Chicago to Indianapolis?
No, but I can do it in my sleep. And I have no, I just, you know, they got a new, new Fair Oaks, whatever that is, a farm thing up north, and a couple new things here and there, and Peyton Power down here, which is kind of cool. And, but yeah, a lot of times, sometimes I go through my old alma mater, Purdue. I like going up the other way and see what's new over there, and a few things have changed, but yeah, so it's a drive I can do in my sleep now.
I can speak from experience that Fair Oaks Farms probably has the nicest Fairfield Inn of any Fairfield Inn in the Marriott chain. It really is an interesting place up there.
Yeah.
But also you have the, what seems like miles and miles of the wind turbine farms that are
I stopped
up
one
that
night.
Way.
It was the full moon was out and the wind turbine was spinning, and I tried to take a picture to get it look like the wind turbine right in the moon, so it looked like a Mercedes emblem, but the
picture came out blurry, so I'm not
a good photographer.
So as far as your IndyCar Series team in 2024, you're going a little bit different this year. In the past, you've had basically two full-time drivers. This year is going to be a rotating crew that you've got with some of the cars. I know you're also breaking in a young kid with Nolan Siegel. Mm-hmm. He's also competing in some Indy Next races. So how did you end up with this type of rotation, which in a lot of ways is a little bit of a throwback to earlier days of Dale Coyne Racing?
It's kind of a supply and demand. We looked to get a really good driver for one of the cars, and the market was a little slim. We had hoped to get Roman back.
Did not.
We had some sponsors that were waiting. We had some drivers with some sponsors that we thought were coming through that didn't come through. So we kind of got caught out a little bit. So that puts us in this mode of, the 18 car is fine. It's got Nolan for four races because he can do four races and keep his rookie status while he's chasing the Indy Next Championship this year. And then Jack Harvey to do the rest of the races. So that car is solid. The 51 car will be a mix all year long, though.
Wanting to get Roman Grosjean, you have always seemed to have a really good working relationship with him where other team owners have not. As nice as a guy as he can be outside of the car, he can be a little tempestuous. He does have a temperament, as we've seen on display before. What's your secret in being able to get along with Roman where other team owners have not been able to?
I think we respect his skill, and when he gets upset, that's his passion. So, some people say it's because he's French. I think he's just passionate about racing. So he wants it right and not afraid to say what he feels. And that's fine. We like that.
I was going to say, in a lot of ways, you want a competitive guy that's behind the wheel of your race car. You don't want a guy that's going to be polite and let people, go ahead and pass, things like that. One of the drivers that you had a couple of times at the beginning of the year was a very accomplished sports car driver, Colin Braun. You had him at St. Pete. You ran him at Thermal. What's your plans with him for the rest of the year?
He's going to do a couple more races, and we're working that out right now, which ones. And the same thing there. Do we want to take him over four races or just at four races so he can do keep his rookie status for next year in case something happens and we get a full-time ride for him next year? So we're just keeping all of our options open right now.
What do you see his potential being? Because like I said, he's a very accomplished sports car driver in North America.
He's had it tough here. I mean, when he went to St. Pete, he'd only done one day of testing at Sebring in this car, in an open-wheel car. So he really got thrown into the deep end with weights on his ankle. And but he's gotten better. He did better at Thermal. It's unfortunate he couldn't do a couple of these tests we wanted to do because he's got so many commitments on the other side. So that's kind of what's holding him back from being able to grow faster with us is his conflicts on the other side. And we knew that. And we understood that going in. And so did he. So, but we'll see. He'll do a couple more races, and we'll see about after that.
As a longtime team owner in the NTT IndyCar Series, wasn't that long ago where the starting fields might have been 18, 19, 20 cars. Now with the addition of Prima Racing that's going to come over in 2025, the series is potentially up to 29 cars, which is more cars than in the glory days of CART in the 1990s when full field used to be 28 cars. What do you see as being the reason for this impressive growth in IndyCar?
The field growth is good. I wish the series was growing a little stronger than it was. I wish we had some better races. I, for one, think we need a new car. And I'm, you know, coming from a team with a smaller budget, that might be a surprise. But I think we need a newer car. But it's got to be designed by the right person, not designed by a committee. And be the best looking car in the world, be the best sounding car in the world, be the best racing car in the world. But I think we've got to work on everything. We've got to work on promotions. We've got to work on race events. We've got to work on teams. We've got to work on drivers. Everything. I mean, obviously we want a better TV package, but you've got to have support to do that. You know, it's funny that I just saw the NCAA women's outdrew the NCAA men's. Well, I say a big part of that is they had a better game. It was tied up to the end. The unfortunately for Purdue, it was kind of a blowout. So people want to see good competition on a racetrack, or good competition on a basketball court. That will help your ratings. And I think we do have good ratings. You know, we know that one guy is not going to win every race here, which you really can't say that about Formula One. You put your money on one guy and you're probably going to win every weekend. But here, anybody can win. And I think we need to keep that going and have good, tight racing. And I think if you do the right steps, that can happen.
So you as a team owner have always been interested in IndyCar having a good TV package because that helps you generate sponsorship. NBC has done a very good job with network time, with the platforms, with, you know, their website coverage, with Peacock, with all of that. There may be a new player such as Fox may offer more money, but may not have some of the extra platforms that NBC does. So from you as a team owner, which direction would you go?
That's up to those guys. They know more. I know race cars and race strategy. Those guys know TV. You need somebody smarter than anybody here, and I think they've hired somebody smarter than them to figure all that out. So we need to trust in what those people that have the expertise in this have and make the right decision.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break. It might be winter, but it won't be long before the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series is back on track. And our friends from Hy-Vee are back, preparing for another Hy-Vee IndyCar race weekend at Iowa Speedway as IndyCar returns to the fastest short track on the planet, July 12th through the 14th, 2024. It's one of the biggest weekends of the summer, with two races on the 0.875-mile Iowa Speedway Oval, and four of the biggest names in entertainment performing before and after each race. This year's schedule includes a night race on Saturday, July 13th, and a day race on Sunday, July 14th. But wait, there's more! Four of the biggest names in entertainment will perform before and after each race, including Luke Combs on Saturday and Post Malone on Sunday. Two more major entertainers will be announced by Hy-Vee soon. Combs will perform on the Hy-Vee stage on Saturday, July 13th, before the first NTT IndyCar Series race of the unique doubleheader weekend. Post Malone will rock the stage on Sunday, July 14th, following the final IndyCar Series race of the weekend. It will be the first time the famed entertainer has performed in central Iowa. Both concerts will feature a 90-minute performance on the trackside Hy-Vee stage in front of the main grandstands at Iowa Speedway. The concerts are included with each Saturday-Sunday Hy-Vee IndyCar race weekend ticket. Fans can also purchase a concert pit pass for access to the exclusive trackside concert viewing area, with passes expected to sell out quickly. Event weekend tickets and passes can be purchased online at www.hyveeindycarweekend.com. Since the inaugural event in 2022, Hy-Vee IndyCar Race Weekend has become one of the most popular annual events on the IndyCar calendar. Although the Hy-Vee IndyCar race weekend at Iowa Speedway promises to be the highlight of the summer, race over to your local Hy-Vee throughout the year. Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle.
Hi, I'm Scott McLaughlin, driver of the number 3 Team Penske Chevy, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Here is the rest of my exclusive interview with IndyCar Series team owner Dale Coyne for Pit Pass Indy. Also, another major topic is potential charter system, and that would benefit all the team owners that have been invested millions and millions of dollars into funding IndyCar teams. Chip Ganassi said before the start of the season, we spend all this money, but really at the end of the day, when we decide to get out of the sport, our teams aren't worth anything. So you as a team owner, how important would it be to go to a charter system?
Well, I've been through it all. I was here when John Frasco talked at O'Hare about the old franchise system that we had, and that worked out good. It worked out good for us. It was a lifeline for us. The charter system, I just think that's a question, and that's a matter of the times. You know, if you had $5 trillion, you couldn't go start an NFL team. You just couldn't do it. And so I think we need some structure. I think the charter system's good. NASCAR's done it, and it's worked good for them. Michael's seen the pains about trying to get into Formula One. You just can't buy your way in. You just can't show up with whatever amount of money you have in race. You've either got to buy your way into a team, or they've got to expand and let you in. Same with the NFL. It has done several expansions, but you just can't show up. So I think that's the way of the future. It's not, you're not buying an engine for $20,000 anymore and maybe going to one race or two races. Everything's a big commitment now, and I think because of that, the whole structure's changed. There's no guy with a school bus going to go run 4 or 5 races because he's got an engine and an old car, you know. So things have changed. It's much more competitive. It's much more expensive. So you do need some level of guarantee. So I think the charter system is good.
But there seems to be talk. Originally, the charter system may have included guaranteed starting positions for the Indianapolis 500. The last time I spoke with Mark Miles, the CEO of Penske Entertainment Company, he said the current proposal does not guarantee starting positions for the Indianapolis 500. When you go into a sponsor and sell them on a full season commitment for them to give you millions of dollars to put their name on your race car, I'm sure the Indianapolis 500 is the biggest reason why they want to be involved. So what's your viewpoint on what would the charters be worth without the guaranteed starting positions for the Indianapolis 500, which are very unpopular with the fans?
No, I know it's unpopular with the fans. It's unpopular with me to a certain point. It should be the 33 fastest. I wish we had that in the charter system, but I understand not why we don't. Tradition is still tradition. You can be the top-ranked golfer in the world, but it doesn't mean you're going to play on Sunday at the Masters. So you've got to qualify, you know. Yes, it gets you in on Thursday, but it doesn't mean you're there on Saturday and Sunday. So the way you perform is important. And I think where they're going is good. It's a great starting point. Maybe there's some other way you can cover charter teams in some fashion. I don't know. It seems like the person on the bubble who gets bumped gets more damn TV coverage than the person starting 33rd every year. Yeah. So, who knows? But I think it should be the 33 fastest.
And with the growth that IndyCar has, like I said, with the addition of Prema, of course, that number can fluctuate up or down because we've got some team owners now. Chip Ganassi Racing has 5 entries. That's a lot. Andretti Autosport, they've gone from 4 to 3. So the number doesn't always get added onto the current field because there may be a team owner or two who subtract a car. So do you always see that as being a floating number, what the car count actually is?
I think it is, and I think the thing that happened this year was Andretti going to 3 cars. We were told in the very beginning that no team could have more than 3 leader circles, except for Michael, because he was grandfathered because he was already at 4. The minute he steps down to 3, he's at three for the rest of his life. So that happened this year when they went from four to three. And they also talked about wanting 25 charters. Well, the numbers all line up now. The stars all align. You have 25 full-time teams if you limit it to three a team. Ganassi's got four and five, which makes 26, 27. So the numbers work right now. It's perfect. You don't have to – no one gets mad. Everybody gets what they want. Maybe the devil's in the details about starting spots and other things, but it works right now. And Michael going to three has triggered that, I think.
So you brought up the bit about you would like a new car, and I think the fans definitely want to see a new car. This year's Indianapolis 500 is going to have the fastest 33, 12-year-old cars in racing because they began racing this particular car back in 2012, although there's been bodywork changes in iterations.
You know, everybody says that. We used to buy a new car every year, and you'd spend $400,000 for a new car every year. We're going to spend $1 million a car this year to upgrade this 12-year-old car. The hybrid system, all in, when you're all done, is going to cost $1 million an entry to do. So it's not that we're cheap and we don't want to spend the money. We're spending money. Could we spend it smarter and wiser? I think we could. But it's not because we're not spending the money, that's for sure.
What do you think of the hybrid system?
I think it's necessary for the manufacturers. It's funny, I bought a Honda Accord hybrid a couple years ago, and I bought it, and I was naive. I got home, and I said, where's the plug-in? Well, there's no plug-in. Okay, it just regenerates itself. I said, well, this is what cars should be. You know, you don't want to screw up the power grid and save green power by having electric, but then having all these coal-fired electric plants to make the electricity for it. That's just a net gain of zero, it appears to me. But to regenerate yourself and do all that and go from a 24-mile-per-gallon car to a 50-mile-per-gallon car, that should happen as fast as it can. And I think this is good. It's a small step because, again, we're adding it to an existing car. So you don't have the room to put the things in there that you want. So it's a small hybrid system. It's heavy. It's small in capacity. So it's not going to give you the power that we wish we had. I think Formula One, I think I read they're supposed to be 50% hybrid power coming up in the future. That's a tough number to hit.
And also would reduce emissions. It would reduce pollution in the air you're scaling back the amount of fossil fuels that would be burned. I don't know with the current technology, it would be, I'm not a scientist, but very hard to get to net zero in my mind in a time frame. Because like you said, with an electric car, you still got to charge it. And the only way to generate power usually burns some type of fossil fuel.
I'm trying to think. I remember it was like 20 or 30 years before we'd approved a nuclear plant. In France, they put them up every week, it seems like, over there. So, I mean, nuclear power has gotten safer and safer. The waste from a nuclear plant is a problem, but not as bad as the air from a coal fire electric plant. So, we just need to be thinking smart. We need to be thinking ahead. Who knows what's going to happen in the hydrogen world? I think if people put the real resources behind hydrogen, I think that could be the fuel of the future. And electric batteries could get four times better than they are now. That could come back, and I don't, as they are today, I think they're nice, but I think we all saw the films of cars in Chicago when it was cold that day, and people are pushing their Teslas up to it's got flaws. You can't just think today, you got to think forward. And can battery technology get better? I'm sure it can. Can hydrogen figure out how to make a hydrogen generator that works? I would hope they could. You know, hopefully someday we have fusion instead of fission. So, but those are all out in the future.
And also, you've been involved with the Indianapolis 500 for nearly 50 years, and it's unquestionably back to the prominence of being a can't-miss sporting event. The crowd last year was the largest that they had since the sold-out 100th Indianapolis 500. And even that year in 2016, if you probably want to go back to the 90s and 80s, there may have been bigger crowds here in other years. It was just that there was more room in the infield. They didn't have road courses to take up a lot of the real estate. How pleased are you to see the resurgence in the Indianapolis 500?
No, it's great. I mean, everybody who comes here every year, they come to this place, they come through the gates, and it's just different. It's a different feeling for spectators. It's a different feeling for the competitors. It's our Super Bowl for sure, and it's the biggest race in the world.
And finally, since you are a Chicago sports guy, I have to ask you, the Chicago Bears traded Justin Fields to the Pittsburgh Steelers for basically nothing, a sixth-round draft pick. They're probably going to draft Caleb Williams of Southern Cal. As a Bears season ticket holder or a Bears fan, what do you think?
Well, I think I don't think Justin was that bad. I think they could have done better with that.
Certainly more in a sixth-round
pick. Yeah, they should have parlayed that and what they need to make their offensive line better or wherever their weaknesses are. I thought they had the number one pick. I said, you got a couple things. You can trade that away and gain a lot, or you keep Justin Fields in your pocket and trade him when you need to. We've seen number one draft picks fall apart, and we've seen 100 draft picks become stars. So you never know.
And the other thing you never know is it seems like every year they're talking about a new stadium for the Chicago Bears, and every year I don't see it getting any closer. Is that ever going to happen?
I think the Bears need to stay downtown. Maybe that's the Dilara of stadiums. You just keep adding to it, Yeah, this new fancy thing, and that's like it's like the Greek meet Star Wars, and now how do you put a roof on that? Soldiers Field has got a lot of history. Wrigley Field's got a lot of history. Chicago's got a lot of history. And I hope they stay downtown somehow. I understand they want something that they can get a Super Bowl, but how much is that worth? I don't know.
Well, as a Chicago White Sox fan, I'm just hoping that they're able to stay in Chicago and not end up moving to Nashville, which seems to be the direction it could be heading if they don't get a new stadium themselves. But knowing how Illinois politics works, I don't think that's going to happen.
But that stadium isn't that old, is it?
It's not. And, me being a White Sox fan, there are advantages to plenty of parking. They have tailgating. Yeah. They do that. Everybody seems to knock the location, the neighborhood, et cetera, et cetera. But it's try to find a parking spot when you go to Wrigley Field.
You park in somebody's mailbox,
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, hey, one's popular and the other isn't.
Yeah.
I've never really understood that.
Yeah.
But that's for another discussion altogether. But anyway, Dale Coyne, always been a big admirer of how you've supported the IndyCar series and how every season, through thick and thin, you're out there competing against the best, often beating the best. And that's got to be a lot of satisfaction when Dale Coyne wins a race and beats Chip Ganassi and Roger Penske and Michael Andretti and Bobby Rahal and all the other, Arrow McLaren and all the other big teams in the NTT IndyCar series.
Yep, no, for sure. I mean, our first win years ago with Justin at Watkins Glen, there's a painting on my wall and there's three cars behind us, two Ganassis and a Penske. And that was pretty satisfying.
All right. Well, Dale Coyne, I know that you're the hero of the little guy. So good luck in the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season. Good luck in the 108th Indianapolis 500. And thank you for joining us today on Pit Pass Indy.
Thank you, Bruce.
And that puts a checkered flag on this edition of Pit Pass Indy. We want to thank our guest, 2021 NASCAR Cup Series champion Kyle Larson, as he prepares for his first Indianapolis 500, and longtime IndyCar team owner Dale Coyne for joining us on today's podcast. Along with loyal listeners like you, our guests helped make Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental and Hy-Vee, your path to victory lane in IndyCar. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske Truck Rental keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. And for all your shopping needs, be sure to visit your local Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. For more IndyCar coverage, follow me at Twitter at Bruce Martin, one word, uppercase B, uppercase M, underscore 500. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thanks to our production team. Executive producers are Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Recordings and edits were done by me, Bruce Martin, and final mixing was done by Dave Douglas. Learn more at evergreenpodcast.com. Until next time, be sure to keep it out of the walls.